This episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief. Welcome to The Last Storm. My name is Mark Flatt, and I'm calling in from the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. Today, as always, I'm joined by my brother Dave. He's calling in from Maryland at the banks of the Potomac River. Thanks for joining us. Here we go.
Man, so jumping back to the 75 at 75, man. I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but man, I kind of feel like you hit it on the head yesterday with a whole, 45% of the active players that are on the NBA or the active players that are on this 25 new list play for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think that's truly amazing. Looking at it, you got KD, you got Russ, you got Chris Paul, you got Carmelo Anthony. You know,
I see what you did there. You were like LeBron. You skipped James Harden. That's good.
I wanted to say James Harden in there too, but like, you know, like, I don't know, man. I still feel like James Harden, like, he's got to earn something right now, man. He's got to prove it. And everybody is doubting him.
Yeah. I saw him with a picture of him and AI at the 75 anniversary. It's like, I think he's tapping into I'm the ghost of AI or something. I don't get it.
He's like looking at AI and looking at James Harden. They were both just pure scores, you know, like AI played defense, but I mean, he was really known for his scoring ability. So it doesn't surprise me that they connected on this level.
James Harden, pretty damn good passer. I mean, not to say AI wasn't, he just didn't really care to, but like, yeah, I mean, we're still waiting for somebody to come along and pull off a tiny Archibald, which is, you know, lead the league in scoring and assists in the same year. It seemed like Russ was going to be able to do it. It seemed like Harden was going to be able to do it. But, you know, nobody since Tiny Archibald has led the league in both assists and points in the same year. So, you know, probably not going to be Harden now. Probably not going to be Russ now. So that's the next thing. I mean, man, there was a couple of years, though, where it seemed like Russ was going to pull that off.
And I want to throw this out here because I want pretty clear indication of where I believe Josh Giddey is going. In 2027, I think Josh Giddey will become the first player in NBA history to lead the league in scoring and assist. All right, so let's just throw that out there. Second of all,
Tiny Archibald,
he is going to have to beat Shea in scoring in order to be able to accomplish this in 2027. So I think it's going to be fun to watch, and it'll be kind of one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, will he do it? Who knows? But like, I don't know. Tiny was a friend of ours. He's someone that we talk about a lot because he's a really good person. He played for the Celtics, and we got to know him right around the NBA 50th anniversary, and a great guy. And at that point, he had only been out of the league for, you know, now looking back, I think it was like 15 years. But, you know, it seemed like a lifetime because it was for us. But now it's kind of like, wow, you know, I can't believe we're still at the point where we're talking about, you know, in 6 or 7 years, you know, we're looking at maybe Giddey going off and doing what somebody they call Tiny did, you know, all those years ago. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right, bro. I think Giddey's got that opportunity. I think scoring isn't really his, like, what he wants to go out there and do, but he'll do it if he's required. And as he builds up his confidence in that, you know, corner three and moving around, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and for me, looking at 5 years down the road, that's what I draw the line. Like, obviously, if you're looking at players saying leading the league in scoring, certain things have to go right for Josh Giddey to be able to do that. But what I've seen out of him already, there's no doubt in my mind that he could actually do this. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, at the age of 24, at the age of 25, he's going to be in the top 10 in scoring in the NBA. And I think that's the thing about it is that the progression of his game and where he's learned how to play and all these other things that go into it, it's encouraging as somebody that loves the NBA, that watches the NBA, watches, you know, a lot of old games and different things like that, because it's fun. It's fun to see where the style is going. And seeing how Josh Giddey controls the style of where the basketball is going to be heading, I have to say, man, scoring and assist, leading the league in those, it's going to be one of those things for us to look back and truly appreciate. I do think that at least once in his life as well, is he's going to be top five in scoring in the league, top five in assist in the league, and top five in rebounds in the league. And these are things that you don't see a lot of players accomplish, but because of the way that Josh Giddey plays the game of basketball, can you put him in a box? Can you say this is all he's going to be able to accomplish? Because the progression at 19 years old that we've seen is far greater than we expected at this age. So saying that he can't average 30 points a game in an entire season seems silly, because I've seen so much growth already.
Well, I want to ask you a question. But first, you know, I was showing Faith, my wife, some videos of Josh Giddey this morning. I was like, look, here's why he's going to be so great. It's that cross-court one-handed pass that he does off the dribble. You know, that's the most important pass in basketball. And the fact that he can do it off the dribble, he does it with such accuracy. The ball gets there fast, but it's also a good pass. It's on time and on target. That's what we know Josh brings to the game. But for you to say that you think he's going to be able to average 30, like, what do you think his game will look like, you know, when he's at that level?
Well, here's the thing about it is we've seen that he can add a 3-point shot, but that's not his game. You know, you and I both understand his game. His game is getting into the post and getting inside, getting in and driving to the hole. My question to you is that the way that Josh plays, though, are you telling me that he's not going to get to the foul line 7 times a game and that he's not going to hit at least, I don't know, 12 layups a game?
I mean,
like, that's the thing, is like, that's all we're talking about. We're not talking about this incredible amount of shots that have to go in. We're talking about what Josh does already. He attacks the hole. It's not uncommon for Josh to go and get 15 great layups or great shots in the lane already. So for Josh to learn how to hit those and convert those, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. And I think that's what we're going to see in the second year, when everybody's sitting back and going, holy cow, this guy's putting up 24 points a game. You know, like, that's the progression that we're talking about, you know? And
yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I think he can, you know, he'll probably always want to shoot anywhere from 5 to 7 threes a game. I think that that's, you know, something you do to keep the other team honest. And if he can get, you know, consistent with that, you know, he'll, you know, he can knock down 3 a game. You know, that's probably a lot for someone who doesn't, you look at it as their primary thing, but I think that he could get there. And then on top of that, like you're saying, the layups. Well, here's the thing for Giddey. A layup for him is really a runner inside the free throw line. All of those are pretty much layups. So he's got that runner down. He's got the ability to finish at the basket. You know, I think, yeah, I mean, I see the tools there for him to be able to go out there and put up 30 for a season. Will he, you know, it's going to matter a lot how, you know, the next couple of years go with his development. Do we keep requiring, you know, a lot from him on the offensive end? If we can do that, because, you know, this is what we need from him, is for him to be in these positions and for him to be required to score, because let's face it, he's really more comfortable being a facilitator. But, you know, I was watching, like I said, some of those highlights, and it was really focused on the New York Knicks game, and a lot of his best passes resulted in a missed shot. And I'm like wondering, like, yeah, I mean, he got, I think, 11 or 12 assists that game, but really, if everybody was knocking down shots around him, he could have had 20. So is it reasonable to think that he could, this is crazy, but, you know, average 28, maybe 30, and put up 15 assists a game?
Well, that's what he's going to have to do in order to be able to lead the league in scoring and assist.
Right.
I mean, those are the numbers that he's going to have. And that's what I have to say is, yes, without even blinking, do I think that Josh Giddey can average this 28 points, 30 points, and 15 assists? Because, like, breaking down his game, you see what he creates every single game. You see the stuff that he does right in every single game. And then you see the stuff that he does wrong, right? And you're like, oh, that pass was half a step to one way or the other. The outcome is completely different. So his mistakes are slightly off. They're not like, you know, like, I mean, I'm trying to think. Russ, for instance, rookie year, comes down the lane, right? And he has KD in the corner, and he throws the ball like 40 feet over his head into the stands. You see what I'm saying?
I feel like that happened a lot even after his rookie year.
Okay, so then you get it. with Giddy, the mistakes are so slight. Like, you're like, ooh, ah, that was so close, wide open layup, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. And if we're talking about getting better, and as the everything progresses, as you get better as a player, these passes, they slow down for you. You realize, oh, I'll fake it this way, pass it back door this way. Josh is a pump fake away from getting these guys wide open, and that's something he'll add. So do I think that he's going to be one of those guys that is going to get ridiculous double-doubles with 40 or triple-doubles with 40 points, you know, 25 assists and 15 rebounds? Fuck yeah. I mean, without even blinking. Like, this guy is next in line to be the greatest. And up until this point, we're all talking about Luka being the next great player in the NBA, but everybody has stopped saying that, and people are starting to say, you know, what about Giddy? This is interesting, because his game fits more with the way the NBA is progressing and changing than Luka's game does.
Yeah, I mean, we're asking a lot from him offensively as far as progression goes, but yeah, his grasp on the game. You know, I saw Mark Cuban talking about Luka being humbled and ready to, you know, focus on conditioning, but
Luka being, I know. Well, fucking Cuban, bro. Come on, man.
He said he kind of got embarrassed because everybody's talking about him being out of shape, and now he's going to start taking his conditioning more seriously. But I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is not a conversation we're going to be having in 2 or 3 years about Josh Giddey. You know, like, I get it. Luka played, you
professional
know,
habits, bro.
Yeah. It, you know, and playing out on the Olympic, you know, squad, and he made it clear he would prefer to win Olympic gold medal than an NBA championship. And then I think his, like you said, professional habits kind of backed that up when he didn't show up, you know, in shape right after playing for that Olympic gold. I wonder how this will, not he didn't play for gold, but playing in the Olympics, but I wonder how this will end up, you know, affecting, you know, his progression and his career. But, you know, same way with Josh Giddey, you look at it and you say, like, this European style where you can, you know, attack downhill, you know, tear up the defense, and then from there you can score. Luka is kind of flipped. He's more of a scorer who then tears up the defense. But in the end, you know, I think it's relevant, but it's also a little early. But I mean, we can wildly speculate. I mean, we're on the break between the All-Star break.
Well, and I feel like that's what, there's not a lot of other podcasts out there that are talking about how great Josh Giddey is and how great his progression is. Yes, they're talking about how good he could become, but the reality is that they're kind of losing sight of how good he is. And that's where I keep coming back, and I feel like we have to keep talking about Josh, because, you know, I know we have a lot of listeners from Australia, but you guys know how good Josh is already. But I feel like with the way that the NBA is that the more that we talk about Josh and the more that we create buzz about Josh, it's better for him. That's why we spend hours upon hours upon hours a week talking about Josh, because we see this young man that has the potential to be the next great basketball player in the NBA. And he is in the right organization to really, I don't know, guard that and make sure that the outcome is going to be guaranteed, that he's going to be one of the greats. Like, this organization is designed for Josh Giddey and for these other young players like Shea and Dort that are coming through. But the reality is that once we recognize what type of player Josh was, and this was pretty early on in his rookie year, Mark and I were like, holy shit, this young man is going to take the NBA by storm, and it's just a matter of time. Now, I felt like it was going to happen at the end of the season, like the last like 15 games of the season, like Josh was going to be able to put together some insane stuff, but he did that way before. We even talked about in the beginning of the season when he was starting out the season, saying if Josh doesn't start and he earns a starting position, that would be great. But guess what he did? He surprised us all. He came out ready to play, ready to fire. He understands the game in such a way that he is like a coach on the floor. And that's saying something, because we have a young coach, a young player that's a star and becoming a superstar eventually. And this is what's going to happen. We're going to sit back and we're going to watch this team as it was Shea's team and Dort's team. And it's going to end up morphing into Shea's, Dort's, and Giddey's team. And I feel like that's already happening. But the reality is that that's the fastest I've ever seen a player fit in and all of a sudden make it 1, 2, 3, we're the bad guys. And I love it.
And the question comes down to, for me, like, what will, you know, SGA's game look like, you know, with Giddey out there? And I'm hoping we get to see tomorrow. I mean, there's a good chance that SGA will be back, but my guess is right as soon as we drop this podcast, there will be an announcement that makes what we're saying completely obsolete.
And I'm okay with that, Mark. If we decide that Josh isn't going to play, or Josh, that Shea's not going to play this year, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because this team is proven to be able to win, proven to be able to do some amazing things without Shea. Yes, adding Shea would be amazing, but I'm kind of high about the way that this team is playing together as a unit right now. You know, like, I love to see Shea get plugged into that, but I don't want to see it get disturbed. And I want to see if they can continue with this and put things together towards the end of the season. I'm sure Coach D and Sam Presti are the same way. But also, with Shea, is whether or not he comes back and play, I really don't care at this point. Because this team is understanding the game in a different way. Yeah, Shea's just going to open things up for everybody. And he's going to have insane games if he comes back, putting up 35, 40 points in a game. Because that's the way he's going to be plugged in at. I think that's the way he's going to be plugged in at least. That's the way I feel like he's going to be plugged in as the scoring guard that he is. You know, like, you know, Shea, you go out there and score. Giddey, your job is to get Shea open.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, like, that's Giddey's job.
I would
you
like
know
to
what?
See
you
that.
Get Shea open.
But I wonder, like, the reason I want to see Shea back right now, obviously we want to win games, but like, more importantly, I want to see this team, you know, because we're so young and we're so impressionable, I want to see them gel together. And if we hold SGA out, then we're sitting in a spot where it's even more Giddey's team. And while that would be fun, you know, getting more triple-doubles and breaking new records and all that stuff would be really fun, at this point, we've done a lot of that. We don't need to do more. At this point, we need to gel as a unit. But if Shea doesn't come back, man, we're going to have fun either way. I mean, it really doesn't matter. We're going to have a lot of fun.
And that's what's different from last year and this year. Is last year, it was doomsday. Fuck. We're going to get our asses handed. And this year, Giddey has changed that narrative. And I think that's what's so powerful.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Last year, there was a game, I think, against the Grizzlies. And we were up at halftime. And we blew the lead. And we did it in a way where we looked at each other after the game and we're like, it could be a long time before we get another win. And it was. It was a very long time. And the games were hard. It was a difficult time to be a Thunder fan because, like, a lot of games we weren't even close. But what we were able to do was watch the team develop. And a lot of people are looking at it and saying, wow, it's a surprise the Thunder have a top 10 defense. To us, it's not, because when you're losing that many games, you get to ask yourself why you're going out there. And we weren't suddenly going to develop offensive skill to a new level where we were going on to win games. Like, that wasn't just going to happen out of nowhere. But we could develop our defense well enough to compete and try to find a way to compete for four quarters. And that, we always talk about that. We want to compete for four quarters. And it's kind of redundant, but the truth is, like, we have to talk about it because it wasn't long ago where that wasn't happening. You know, it just wasn't happening. If Shea wasn't out there, then we weren't going to win and we weren't going to compete and we were going to try our best, but it wasn't going to work. And here we are. We've really made one change, you know, like, everybody's gotten a little bit older and more mature, but really the difference is we've added Giddey.
That's it. I mean, really, this team has gotten older, more mature, but the majority of the minutes that we had that other guys were playing, I feel like Josh has filled. I mean, averaging 32 minutes a game. Man, you know, this whole idea of where this team's going is exciting. And I understand that right now it seems gloomy. It seems like a bunch of shit, you know, losing 5 games in a row here, losing 12 games in a row here. To me, it's the whole progression of everything. It's why having a team that's rebuilding is so fun, is you get to understand each of the players. You get to understand where each one of them are coming from and going and really break it down. I mean, how many people in Oklahoma City hated Russ after we drafted him for years and years and years, saying that Russ wasn't a point guard? I mean, like this is the type of stuff that happens in NBA communities. And that is why it's to us, it's always been, you know, stay positive. You know, think about these guys on the better sides. And looking at Josh and realizing where he's going, like, to me, it's fun. It's looking at Dort and saying, if Dort puts everything together, Dort, Shea, and Giddey could be in the top 25 players of this next generation. And they could be in, you know, 2046. We're going to be all sitting there just being like, holy cow. Remember 25 years ago when we were talking on that podcast about how we thought the Oklahoma City Thunder could, you know, have three of these guys? And look, we have three plus blank, and we have how many championships? Like, that's what we could be talking about in 25 years. And to me, there's no greater, like, way of building history than that. And that's why I'm convinced that Sam Presti's staying. Is he's looking at the long term. He recognizes what he's built is going to unbuildable again. Like, the way that he has traded his players out to get draft pick after draft pick after draft pick, like, there's no way that he'll be able to reproduce that again in another city. So why not ride it out here to see what happens, to see what he built? You know, why not?
Yeah, you've got to collect those rings if you've built something. You know, you go somewhere else, you may never get to that point. But I'm pretty sure, you know, Presti's, you know, looking at this and thinking about longevity. You know, there's a point when after Steve Jobs left Apple and when he went back, you know, he decided he really wanted to build the brand in a way where it would last even if he left. And I feel like that's what we're seeing from Sam Presti right now, is him making investments in the future that really they could affect the team even after he goes. And us looking at it and saying 7 years down the road, we're trying to pick as many picks up as we can 6-7 years down the road. That's something that shouldn't change. You know, we should always have a cupboard full of draft picks. And, you know, after the last, you know, great team we had made the, you know, their finals run and weren't able quite to make it back, I think he learned what it takes to have a sustainable team when you're trying to build. And while it, you know, it was pretty awesome that we had all those players, you know, come through the Oklahoma City Thunder, we know that none of them are going to retire having played their whole career with the Thunder. And that, to me, is something that he wants to fix. He wants this team to be somewhere that players are drafted and they retire. And to do that, if you have elite players, you have to find ways to continue to add, you know, tools to your toolbox even when they're winning. And the key to that is to prepare in advance.
Yeah, and seeing the future, like understanding where the NBA is going. We've seen it happen before where GMs have drafted players and, you know, at you know, Kwai, Joka, all these guys that went to the, you know, late in the first round and in the second round that have really changed the NBA and how you draft. We saw another one with Dort. Obviously, players like Dort are being drafted in the second round and now in the first round like they've never been before. This is just how the NBA goes. And so as many players that you can accumulate that are going to be, you know, monumental change. And we saw it with Russ, we saw it with Harden, we saw it with KD, and we saw it with Ibaka last time. This is what we're going to see here, is that we're going to see the same type of mentality. Is every single draft, we could have one or two players that stand out as, you know, phenomenal players. I don't know. I just...
Absolutely no doubt about that, especially when you do such a good job drafting in the second round, late in the second round, late in the first round. And, you know, we were able to trade back where we got two picks in the future for that pick that was in the, I think, 18, that in that range. Like, we were able to trade back. So as long as 16. You're willing to do that, 16, yeah, like,
yep.
you go ahead and you take something, you know, a little bit later, and then you rely on your scouting process. And honestly, like, it's amazing because we're starting to draft with those picks a hell of a lot better than we did. For a while, it seemed like we were missing every time we would have a pick in the 20s. It just, you know, it wasn't going to happen. Now I look at it and I'm like, we're going to find the best value in the draft. And I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I was watching a YouTube video about the Oklahoma City Thunder and the trade that was done here about the Rockets that traded us the two future first round picks, and we traded them number 16, which turned into Sengun. Here's the thing about this, man, and I keep on going back to it, is that when I was listening to this YouTube video, and I want to say it was one of the NBA guys that's always on ESPN, or used to be always on ESPN, no longer is, but he was sitting there and talking about, like, if I was a team that had a player that was averaging, you know, 18, 19, 20 points a game, and I, you know, was looking for a trade to get a first rounder or two first rounders for this player, particular player, guess what? Oklahoma City just opened themselves up to get that. Yes, we traded Şengün away, and he could become a phenomenal player in the NBA later in life, but we traded away Şengün, and we were able to get two future first-round picks that we can take and trade for eventually a star coming in. And eventually we could look back and be like, holy cow, Şengün turned into blank, and look at what we were able to do.
Yeah, and if that's the route we decide to go, but in the end, you know, like we always say, you know, picks are you know, capital. They're cash. They give you, you know, freedom to go and, you know, involve yourself in trade markets. I don't think we're looking for a star, but, you know, under the right circumstances, you know, those two picks could make that happen. And, you know, we'll see. It could be something that we decide to. That's how we need to, you know, complete our team, is to go get somebody who we think could, you know, fill the gaps. But, you know, we're doing this organically. And that's what makes it so fun. You know, we spend time, you know, previewing the draft, and then, you know, we figure out who we pick and we dig into it. But until you see it out there on the court, you never have any idea how it will fit. And once you start to, you know, kind of get an idea of what Sam Presti's vision is for this team, it helps. I mean, you really start nerding out. It's crazy because this team is, you know, it's being built in a way like we've never seen before.
Yeah, and the only reason I come and talk about trading first-round draft picks is, let's just say that we pick up two players every draft, and a third of our, you know, a third player, a first-round pick, is either traded away, like we saw with Şengün, or is turned into whatever, a chance to move up in the draft. So we get two players in the first round every single draft. Now, there's only so many drafts that we can do this before we just have full team, inevitably, right? So that's what I said, like, eventually we're going to look down the road and be like, okay, either A, we trade some of these players away in order to open spots up in the draft for these players, or we have to trade draft picks away. And that's the only reason I bring it up. I know you don't like bringing it up and talking about trading away draft picks or players, but, you know, it's just one of those things that I think about in the future, because the inevitable aspect of it is, you know, Sam set it up so we have three draft picks in almost every single draft until 2027. And that's pretty phenomenal how he set that up. I don't foresee us adding a lot of draft picks to that first round. I mean, I could be wrong and I could eat my words later, but I feel like this is what Sam has set up right now for this team in the future. Like, every year they have three picks in the first round. So you decide, coach and Sam, what you guys need for this next year. Do you need another scorer? Do you need another defender? What do you need? And can we address that in the draft? If not, then are we addressing that through trading, or are we addressing that through free agency?
Right.
So again, like it's more, I feel like it's more of an NFL offseason for these guys than an NBA because of the way that their style is going.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I think, you know, there's definitely a possibility that we'll do it any of the ways that you're talking about. But the reason I don't like thinking about trading the picks is because, like, when you look at, like, Aaron Wiggins or JRE, even Trey Mann, you're like, you know, maybe when we went out and made trades and we brought in players, it wasn't always good for us. Like, Paul George, he was a really good player, but think about how long it took for him to, you know, really gel with Russ. In fact, it never really happened. And, you know, Carmelo, kind of the same way. Like, these guys, like, they are already established NBA players, and it's hard to adjust. And you bring in somebody and you draft them, you know, it's almost like being a part of the organization at, you know, as a teenager, it has a huge impact.
Yeah, it really does. And speaking of huge impact and looking at the salary this year, $23 million, Mark, that's right. $23 million is going back to this team. Not sure how it's going to be divided, but looking at our salaries right now, Kenny, 2 million, Isaiah, 1.7, JRE, 2 million. You know, we have so many guys, Theo, 2 million, Vit, 9.25. You've got Lou Dort at 1.7. You know, these guys are about to double their salaries and more. This is huge that the Oklahoma City Thunder did this, and talking about loyalty and creating a loyalty hey guys, we believe in you and we believe in the future. We want to give you guys more money because you guys have been meaningful. Instead of going out there and seeking another player that's $20 million to fill the space so they'd have to pay the players back, they pretty much are saying, we're going to pay the $1.7, $1.6 million per player on this team because we believe in this team. Man, I love that. That makes me so fucking proud. It's nothing like any other NBA team has ever done that, and this is just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more than you would get from winning a championship, that's for sure, and you kind of wonder, like, what would happen if we weren't paying Kemba Walker, you know, at $20 million or whatever. But in the end, like, this is, you know, it's pretty cool. I thought for sure we would, you know, find a way to bring in somebody that would, you know, fill up that money just because that's what you're supposed to do. But why should Sam Presti do anything that we think you're supposed to do ever?
Yeah, man. And let's talk about something else in the NBA, because Jay Williams said some crazy shit today, or last night, today, whatever. I want to address it to kind of see how you feel about it. Jay Williams, which is obviously a Duke great, came out and said Grizzlies will be in the NBA finals this year. Your thoughts?
They're a really good team. They have really, really good role players. They can compete with anybody. Really good defensively. But no, dude, I don't think they're going to... they'd be lucky if they made it to the Western Conference Finals. Will they get past that? I couldn't imagine that, man. But you know what? Who am I to question someone like Jay Will?
Man, this is where I keep going back to. All right, here we go. Phoenix Suns. Let's see what they do without Chris Paul. Golden State Warriors, right? They look good. And then you got the Memphis Grizzlies. Can Memphis be in a spot to beat, at this point, the Golden State Warriors in seven games?
You know, they have good perimeter defense. They can defend all five positions. And, you know, they could. I mean, if it would, you know, I don't want to say they can, but I guess I just did. I mean, it's interesting to think about, just because defensively, they do really well on the perimeter. So that would be a fascinating matchup. So, yeah, I dig the idea for sure.
I mean, they're one of the teams that leads the NBA in the West as far as scoring. They have a great conference record at 28-12, which is, you know, phenomenal to see there for them. But I look at it, and I have to circle, and I have to say the Grizzlies are a phenomenal team, well-coached. They have a bunch of great players. They're very well balanced as far as veterans and young players go. But seven game series for a team that's had trouble to stay healthy, they'd have to get, you know, first through the Denver Nuggets at six, right? And then they would have to be able to be in a position to play against Golden State. So you're talking about, I mean, the Denver Nuggets aren't chumps, and especially if they can get healthy, or semi-healthy before the playoffs, it's going to be a hard game for Memphis. And then you're looking at, right in the eye, Golden State Warriors, and there's no way that Memphis beats them in four or five games. Like, that's not the way this against the Golden State Warriors are going to go. It's going to go six, seven games. And does Memphis have the guys that are going to be able to withstand that type of you know, beatdown? I mean, we saw it with Damian Lillard every single year. Like, he would get, like, beat the shit out of in the season, and then you get to the playoffs and he has nothing left in the tank. And even though he's one of the best players in the league, still has nothing left in the tank. I feel like that's going to be very similar to the Grizzlies when you get there.
Yeah, I think you make some good points. I really do think they're going to have some trouble, but I think they're a really good team. And I think that, you know, a lot of situations you think a team can go as far as their best player can take them. And if that's true, I mean, they could go to the finals, but I think they're at least a year away, but we'll see. I mean, obviously they're on it. They've had a hell of a year this year.
So my next question goes right with the Memphis Grizzlies, as they were kind of the surprise team of this year, at least for the West, and what they've been able to do, completely unbelievable, really is, especially without being with Ja Morant for so long. But I look at this Oklahoma City Thunder team, man, and I see that the way that they're playing, And I say to this is that I feel like next year our record could be flipped at this time of the season. We could be 40 and 18, just like Memphis is 41 and 19. But we could be 41-19 next year instead of 40-18. Out of all the teams in the NBA, I feel like we're the only team that this is a possibility to. And that's something that's pretty unique and pretty special.
Yeah, it seems like there's at least one in the East. You know, like this year it was the Cavs in the East. And last year I think it was the Knicks. But, yeah, I mean, we could definitely be the Western Conference team that surpasses expectations. And a lot of that depends on, you know, how we start playing tomorrow night. Like, are we going to come out and, you know, pick up from where we left off? Because, I mean, we were playing really good basketball. And how does SGA, you know, come back? And does he come back? And what about Dort? What about Kenny? Like, I think we're out six players, you know, the final game there. But we only talk about really SGA because, you know, but those other guys are really important. What's up with Moose? All these things. So it's going to be fascinating. And I'm definitely ready for some more games. It's been a bit. And, you know, I've had a lot of fun. It's definitely been awesome to have Giddy out there representing the Oklahoma City Thunder. And really, like, as far as it goes, man, I don't think anybody else, you know, as far as young players, rookies, really made a bigger splash at this game than Giddy did.
No, man, not at all. And like I said, Josh Giddy is going to be one of those guys that people are going to look at in the future and be like, oh, this is the moment, right? This is the moment we all got to recognize him. 3 triple-doubles in a row, right into the All-Star break, and made a name for himself in the All-Star break. Last thing before we go, Mark, this 24 games that are left, what is your wild prediction about this Oklahoma City Thunder team with 24 games left?
Man, that's a good question.
It could be player-related. It could be team-related. It just could be organizational-related. Just whatever you think about a wild prediction with this team.
Man, I'd love to go 500. I think that would be a little bit, you know, of a wild prediction. But, yeah, if we went 12-12 over the next 24. But individually, let's say I'll go with Trey, man. He puts up 16 a game, you know, for the last 24. I don't know what he's averaging right now, but that may not be that wild considering, you know, the type of run he ended, you know, the break on. But yeah, 16-17 a game for Trey, man, for the final part of the season.
Nice, man.
What about you?
I'm going with Josh Giddey. I'm going with Josh Giddey almost averaging a triple-double through the last 24 games of the season. Almost averaging a triple-double. That means whether he averages, you know, 18 points, 9 assists, and 7 rebounds, the point is he's almost going to average a triple-double through the last 24 games of the season, which I guess isn't that wild of a prediction. But to me, like, just seeing how he left off is just going to be the stepping stone of how he's going to build the last 24 games. And I won't throw this out here. We might end up in a place where we're sitting at 7 or 8 on the draft board, but that's not going to matter. It's not going to matter because we're still going to pick up the best player in the NBA draft. So thank you so much for listening to us. We really appreciate every single one of you guys. It is definitely one of those awesome things that Mark and I get to do and look forward to talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder every single morning. So we will be back tomorrow to break down this Oklahoma City Thunder game versus the Phoenix Suns game and get to the bottom of that. Mark, you want to throw anything in there?
Thunder up, baby.
All day. And just a reminder, this episode has been brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.